Tuition is free with your instructor, Phil Spector.
Yo, that's my man.
Hex Education, only on WPRK.
Economically left out? Trying to make sense of today's economy? Tired of all the lies? Tune in to Punkonomics, an anarchistic scholarly program with punk pop economist at large, Dr. Benny Ballack, every Friday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. Only here on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, 91.5 FM, the voice of Rollins College.
I am not a destroyer of companies.
WPRK, Winter Park, Florida.
Friday night, 7 to 9, DJ Mo, radio show. Friday night, 7 to 9, DJ Mo, radio show. He releases soulful dance, freestyle, and Mo. DJ Mo style.
WPRK greatly appreciates the support of Artichoke Red Vegan Market, who's on a mission to make living a vegan lifestyle easy and convenient, providing basic vegan needs at their local College Park location. Artichoke Red Vegan Market recently moved to College Park at 2808 Edgewater Drive, College Park, Orlando, and are now open for business. They offer organic fair trade coffee at 7 a.m. so that you can start the day out right with a vegan coffee, creamers, and snacks. For more information, Artichoke Red Vegan Market can be seen on Facebook and their website at artichokered.com. That's artichokered.com. Artichoke Red Vegan Market recently moved to College Park at 2808 Edgewater Drive, College Park, Orlando. WPRK would like to thank Artichoke Red Vegan Market for their gracious support.
From the most famous basement in Winter Park, WPRK brings you live DJs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until the transmitter breaks. That's right, until the transmitter breaks. That's when there's panic in the streets. Help WPRK get a backup transmitter. Please donate at helpwprk.org. That's helpwprk.org.
The voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. 91.5 WPRK FM, Winter Park, Orlando. Home of the DJ Mo radio show. Friday afternoons from 5 till 7 p.m.
Good morning, Winter Park. Welcome to Punkonomics, your weekly show that addresses all the issues concerning economics, community issues, and other things that people or your government don't want to talk about. And very quickly, I'm going to have our guests introduce themselves, and we're going to go ahead and start with Punkonomics here on WPRK 91.5. Okay, guys, say hi to our audience out there.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, yeah, who's here?
Okay.
Yes, exactly. Who's here?
Dr. Benny Bialik is here.
I'm Chris Garlock.
Corey Carroll.
Both regulars.
So exactly. The president, the Ayatollah, and James Brown. I got them all here with economic opinions. Who wants to be James Brown here?
That'd be me.
All right.
I'll be the Ayatollah.
can I be presiding over the Revolutionary Tribunals?
Yes, absolutely. A matter of fact, I just want to point out that we just passed one of the most horrendous days that anybody can ever come up with as far as business, economics, and all that kind of stuff, which is Valentine's Day. It's a sham. It should be erased from the calendar, along with Santa Claus and all this other stuff.
I'm actually having my Valentine's Day today. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out my Valentine, Carrie Avery. Yes.
Good for you. Valentine's just puts pressure on people, and as a potential psychologist, I say, hey, if you want to engage in it, come into my office, and we can definitely do it, but just wait until I graduate and get my license. Anyway, with no further ado, Punkonomics. Go for it, guys.
Yeah, poor Jesse's like needs some support here, you know? He's been working classes, writing papers, reforming the radio station, restructuring the schedule. What, last time when I came with my... Oh, yeah. My wife, Charlotte, is having a show here, too. The entire family is going mediatized. Just to remind you, it'll be on Facebook and stuff. We had a little pilot, and I messed up and didn't record it. So that's the lost show. But anyway, it's going to be really fun. It's a fairy tale. We're still working on titles. At last, we had, like, secret tales of the fairies. Though I don't even remember. We'll figure it out in the weekend. Anyway, it's going to be exciting. We'll guest on each other. We'll do stuff. And it's going to be cool. So when I came to do the show in the morning to guest on it with my wife and my daughter, poor Jesse was literally slept here. I mean, I hope he doesn't mind I tell you. I mean, he's here. But I mean, you know, just to tell you, you know, the poor, he's really...
What a lot of people don't know is I'm actually the basement cat here, so...
He's the infamous cat.
He accepts treats.
Night,
he accepts,
you know,
treats.
Well, the trip hop or whatever it is, these plays when I'm usually asleep.
I only do that to keep everybody awake and, you know, hanging out and stuff. But I really don't even know what I play at night, so people might want to just tune in at 10 o'clock Pacific West Coast time or at 1 o'clock East Coast time on Saturdays. But anyway,
one day I'll come and if you'll allow me, since it's after 10, you know, maybe you come and you I get to do a whole Tourette syndrome.
Oh no! Absolutely.
Release some pressure.
You know, I've been wanting to ask you to come over, you know, and bring everybody, and we can just hear come up with a show all of a sudden in the middle of midnight, you know, and just make it very informal, you know.
Yeah,
nothing.
Special.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Special, very special program.
Like yeah.
Anyway, guys, I'm so tempted to keep on yakking away here, but what you guys have to talk about is much more important than what I have to say. So go for it.
Yeah, so we have a couple. I mean, the overarching thing, right? I mean, we put it on the group a little bit. It's kind of these economic theories in current debates, and there's weird stuff going on, you know? Isn't there? I already kind of gave it away a little bit. Corey was complaining on Facebook, the concept.
Yeah,
but that's not just...
gave away the show, basically.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, the chief idea here, between these economic theories. I mean, people in the public sphere hear all the time, you know... simple matter of demand and supply, you know.
Right.
And I tell, and I well, it's okay. Jesse is away from the beep button, so I'm paying extra. I'm extra careful, but I have the shtick in class where I tell. I mean, anybody who tells you it's a simple matter of demand and supply is either of two things: one, they don't know what the bleep they're talking about, or they're lying to you, or some combination thereof. Nothing really in the real world is a simple matter of demand and supply. It's kind of, you know, and then I could segue into minimum wage. But why don't you guys
take it away. I mean, you got an austerity going, you got minimum wage, they're related.
I was thinking we'd do the minimum wage first, yeah, and that's kind of the big topic today.
In some sense.
I mean, you know, this is basically right to what Ben posted on Facebook. You know, the idea that raising the minimum wage is going to reduce the demand for labor is backwards. It's a simple idea. Most people, they get their education in economics, you know, they take it as like a minimum requirement in college, or they maybe have a cursory class in it in high school or something like that. When we teach economics at first, we teach it as a linear thing. You know, everything's one-to-one. We teach with straight lines. And that's because, you know, generally speaking, math can, you know, complex math makes otherwise simple concepts rather complicated. So the reality is, in the real world, these things are nonlinear in their functions. When it comes to...
Yeah, you know, I mean, just to those of you who are unfortunate enough to have to trudge through that monstrous piece of...
We still need this whiteboard.
I enjoy it.
I'm pulling his leg now. Maybe he doesn't need any stress enough.
I'm definitely.
Yeah, Jesse's staying.
It's all
here.
Good. It's all good.
He's
relax.
Staying here. He was going to do some other stuff, but now you're like, yeah, maybe I should stay close by.
But those poor people who have to, and so many of us, have to trudge through that monstrously monopolistically priced $250 economics. Don't even start me on the rhetoric of it. It's like, oh, this is economics with a capital E and an echo, right? It's one school of thought that would emerged after World War II, and I would venture to say that I think, tell me if I'm wrong, about 80% of it is just wrong.
Yeah.
And that 80% probably skipping between observationally, in other words, you look at stuff and, wait a minute, that's not what the book says. And also, even mathematically, by the way, just wrong math, you know? It was very sexy in the 50s, but by now we discover that it's not really applicable to these phenomena anymore. So people who do that
good
actually...
No, it would have been 2 points.
That was quite, yeah. Just score the trash from, I don't know, what is that, 12 feet?
That's
I don't
pretty
know,
good.
Can't do the feet
good
thing.
Shot, over a monitor, too.
Yeah, running Ubuntu. what am I barbering? Maybe I've had too much coffee. But there's a bit in not every one of these books. I have to say that some people have removed this bit, but traditionally it's still, and then maybe it comes back through the back door anyway, right? Supply and demand. So Corey says, first of all, you know, all of this book is full of these X-shaped, right, square lines. Is Corey talking about the fact that lines are never straight in nature? And indeed they aren't. And in fact, sometimes one of the problems is that we just cavalierly say a market and draw a very peculiar and rare sort of market on the board.
And what's interesting to me is that there's often multiple equilibrium as well. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Often coming from the curvature. I mean, literally, those who have in that their mind that supply and demand X and probably just now shivering.
And by the way, the real key here, by the way, is, you know, these relations, it's not always, the lines, not only are they not always straight, they're not always, they don't always move in the same direction. Mm. And that's the key thing with wages and unemployment. They don't always move in the same direction. Right?
You know, we can't observe it. That sometimes blows students' minds. I mean, it's one of those things that, why didn't you tell me that on year one, which actually made us a little bit change our curriculum to at least start telling the kids that there's a lot of weird stuff going to happen, you know? Other than the standard, read the econ book, master it, and thou shalt know the truth and the mind of God or whatever. This religion coming out of University of Chicago. I believe it's my copyright. It's in my book. I call him Chicago Metaphysics. In the sense, it's not science, it's religion.
I have to be nice here. I'm contemplating.
No, I'm not talking about the city. The city is the prettiest city in America. I'm talking about the University of Chicago Department of Economics, by the way.
Corey doesn't want to burn any bridges.
I have to be nice to them, though. I'm thinking about doing a PhD there. Forgive
really?
Me now.
Can't burn any bridges.
You be careful. I mean, like I always tell the right wingers, because most of my students go to George Mason. You know?
Don't change from within.
Exactly.
Change from within.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm a radical. I don't buy into that. The change from within. Borg style.
Don't forget, everything I do is in monetary theory.
If you're willing
so
to go there and inject them with nanobots, then that's then we can talk, you know? No, they really are, in a sense, you know, of caricatural. You know my language already. I hope at least listeners and new listeners, sorry, you know, I mean, I kind of, you know, over the top. They are the source of evil in economics, in academic economics. I think really, they relish it.
You know,
yeah. Everybody hates us. We're in power. We're always wrong, but somehow it's right because we said so. So,
well, what they're riding on is
snotty.
The school has like it's the it's the largest number of Nobel Prize winners, and it's not just in, I mean, it's in all.
We can talk about the fraud, which is the Nobel Prize in economics, that the Nobel family is trying to sue the Bank of Sweden all the time to get rid of.
Yeah, Nobel Peace Prize now.
It's a popularity show. Yeah. Whether it be a fair way, Nobel Peace Prize, who wears it, gets it? Who's kind of the popular dude these days? So it's not really in any sense.
I mean, let's be honest here. Obama doesn't know why he got the Nobel Peace
Prize. That's embarrassing, frankly.
That was embarrassing.
If I was him, I would be like, why are you doing this to me?
Gandhi got the Nobel Peace Prize, right?
Probably, yeah, at some point.
I mean, I think
on the EU,
that guy probably earned it.
The EU got it this most recent time for their monetary.
Now the people giving it to an organization.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, right. That was actually a particularly vile.
That's probably sitting in some bureaucrat's office somewhere.
I mean, that's the whole. I mean, yeah.
Bankers giving each other bonuses, prizes. I mean, you know, Nobel. What's that next to a minor Christmas bonus in Goldman Sachs?
Just as a qualifier, you know, the one person that probably did earn some recognition, like probably the last decade or so, was Krugman. Right? Krugman actually did have a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, and it's always about the work you did 20 years ago. Of course, people need to be a little
that's right.
It's not current, really.
Well, it still has a lot of application. Yeah, I mean, because there's about international arbitrage, trade, basically. Yeah.
And economics moves at a snail's pace.
As the saying goes, somebody needs to help me out with this. Was it Samuelson or Friedman that said the wonderful thing? I think it was Samuelson, that economics progresses, one funeral at a time.
Samuelson. Yeah.
So Samuelson, right? Yeah. Makes sense. He's such a funny guy. He's a very charming guy, by the way. You know, in some conferences sometimes.
By the way, I think Samuelson's the guy. That's the standard textbook economics.
He invented it in 1946. And ever since, he's been, what have I done?
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, most people, if they get your intro to economics, it's through Samuelson.
Yeah, I mean, not anymore, by the way.
Mankiw.
Oh, in the macro.
I still have that book.
Yeah,
oh, tell
you
me. Too. We're drifting into kind of, you know, bitter economy. So the minimum wage, so it's not a simple matter, right? Gory was saying, so we got multiple equilibria. Often even think about it visually. The graph goes into a weird spiral and hits the other graph in multiple places.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, it sometimes looks like that.
So, I mean, the standard argument against the minimum wage about why it kills jobs is, you know, if you increase the labor cost for a business, then, you know, that cuts into their profits. They have to make a strategic decision whether or not to take lower profits or to, you know, fire a few people and keep that level where it is.
But there's
a lot of different ways that they can get around that. That's often not what they do. And I was just reading something on the Wonk blog the other day about it gave several other options. You know, employers can cut back on benefits or hours or training, you know, to keep their profits high without firing workers. They can also cut wages for higher paid workers in order to compensate. They can raise their prices. That's what some of them do. It said there was one major review that said a 10% hike in the minimum wage leads on average to a 4% increase in prices at the companies affected.
And just as a side note here, Bernanke, no matter what he says, he's secretly in the corner right now with his fingers crossed saying, please raise the minimum wage because of the Fed. But the Fed has been trying to do to get the entire nation out of a debt hole. They've been trying to generate inflation. And will raising the minimum wage create inflation? Will it be hyperinflation where you need to buy gold and go into a hole? No. But it'll be inflation, which we haven't had in any meaningful sense for years now.
The main factor of inflation is rising wages. Yeah. Not necessarily just prices, but wages causing those.
And that's another thing. You know, I mean, it wasn't exactly in the plan, but it keeps coming up all the time because really the biggest weakness of this economics we call it neoclassical economics, but that kind of traditional mainstream, the textbook stuff. Incidentally, what today, you know, the Tea Party economics is not that at all. It's more like, you know, Krugman being a little the left side of that, and I don't know, Bernanke being the right side of that, if you will. That's mainstream economics. So there's that whole issue where pop economics is much more right-wing in America, if you will, in academic economics in a large sense. But power, you know, the lack of realizing that there is power. That's how we come up with this insane nonsense, like when a giant, powerful military country comes into contact with a small indigenous island, they will trade fairly and both ships, and the tide will raise both ships. Really? Right? I mean, what are you ignoring here? The temptation of power, right? I mean, one's much powerful than the other. Guess what's going to happen? So same thing, I think so. We talk inflation. Is it good? Is it bad? It's got, as often in economics, costs and benefits. It depends on the circumstances we're in right now.
Definitely.
All of those things that we've touched on before. But when you have a rabid, as I think we all agree here, because we're still trying to recruit a good right-winger, rare birds,
they don't want to actually have to sit down with people and know what they're talking about.
I know a few. I could try
because I haven't. Maybe I don't know enough, or I don't know. Maybe anyway,
In theory, I should be the right winger, but I can't do it.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's
I can't do it.
There's right and there's not, you know. And the same goes to the left, of course. Though in America today, I would pretty comfortably be willing to say that there's certainly much more power in the right wing nut jobs. I mean, they actually run the country.
Yeah.
Then the left wing nut jobs. You know, they're not very influential or numerous.
Well, they would argue. The right would argue the opposite, obviously. But
if
you listen to Fox News,
the country that's more religious than Iran. You know, America is. Is they're talking about. The Christians have this notion of, you know, American Protestants are some kind of escaping the evil Romans in the catacombs, you know, passing along fish symbols. I mean, believe what you want, but my friends, you know, Christian Protestants are not persecuted in America. In fact, you know, you're about as influential as the mullahs in Iran. Okay, it's me again, a little over the top, but not much, all right? The two countries, who are the two countries in the world run by 9 people unelected wearing black robes, you know?
I see what you did there.
It's an important topic in itself, the separation of church and state. One of the great, great ideas, and if we lose it, we're going to lose a lot. But where were we?
We were talking before we came on the show about what the minimum wage is in the past few decades, and what the real value of it was. And you said the peak of it was the peak of the real. Yeah, it was 68. Yeah, when it was 160 was the minimum, was the nominal value, but in real terms,
1016.
Probably in 2012 dollars.
That's right.
The one I have here is in 1996 dollars, and it's at 721.
Yeah, 2012 dollars.
So just in case, right? Nominal is the number written on the check, right? While real is how much stuff you can buy with it. So
the
usually
purchasing power,
like to talk about real terms.
It
usually
takes into account inflation. And so ever since then, it's declined, the real value. While the nominal value has increased, the real value has gone down. So right now it's showing, right now the nominal value is $7.25. But in real terms, at least in 1996 dollars, it's $4.97. Mm-hmm. And so it might be a little bit less than that for today's dollars.
It represented also that if you go back to those days, the apex of American capitalism, if you will, by the numbers, right? The early 70s, you know, it's you can't nail a year, but roughly there.
Right.
In order to pay minimum wage today in America that would have the same purchasing power, so thus as it was back then, it would have to be raised not to $9 but to $12. To maintain just that level of poverty.
Mm-hmm. And I was reading something a while back about fair market value rent for apartments or houses. And nowhere in the country can you be working full-time on minimum wage and afford an apartment for fair market rent anywhere. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yep. And it's going to be these things... of course, they are not neutral, right? So, I mean, they're hurting segments of the population, possibly benefiting others. That depends, just like inflation, you know, as I was mentioning before, right? Yeah, that's where I was and got lost. Inflation, good for some, bad for others, but very, actually, class, if you will. I don't see the aversion of using the word. If you want to, you find that smacks of Marxism, use interest groups, which is the good right wing term from George Mason University that I always like to point out is where the good right wingers are, not Chicago. but at least, yeah, anyway, I got a real beef with those because really they irritate me on so many levels. University of Chicago on so many levels, fundamentally so, really. Yeah, so when you have a little bit more inflation, what's this bias we've had for 20 years? Anti-inflation, oh, inflation, the horrible, the monster, right, to be slayed. The thing is that inflation hurts the wealthy, often can significantly help, not the poor, really, you know, the bottom 90%, what do we want to call it?
Did you say it hurt the wealthy?
Yeah, inflation.
Really? Oh, my God, tears are coming out of my eyes.
Oh, yeah. Jesse's like buried in Soviet... style paperwork bureaucracy here.
He's showing a lot.
That really
he's showing a lot
there.
Of faith right now by being a good 4 feet away from the bleep button.
Yeah,
pressure's on, Ben.
His muscles are tense, ready to jump.
But I will say though that in certain circumstances, inflation can be pretty rough for everyone. I mean, when I was in South Sudan last year, and when they shut off the oil production. Prices started to inflate a lot. I mean, they were seeing 30% inflation like every month.
I think we need to qualify distinct that there are different types of inflation.
Yeah, different types of inflation, yes.
So,
yes.
I mean, you know, that's the sort of what you're talking about is a sort of inflation. It's similar to like what you saw in the Weimar Republic, which is what the right wing always goes to when we talk about reflation is Weimar Republic, you know, printing
it's
money.
Just before the Nazis.
What people don't realize about the Weimar Republic, right, is that there it wasn't just a monetary phenomenon. They had a huge contraction of labor. A lot of people don't realize this, but in the early 1900s, your main motive power was horses, right? You used a horse on the farm. Horses were still used in factories to move things. And the equine population in Europe was reduced by like 80-odd% after World War One.
Human population was
not to mention the workers, not to mention the fields have been bombed into oblivion.
So that's a supply side cause of inflation.
That's the damaging type of inflation. That's the type of inflation that really hurts people. Because when there's a shock to your productive forces. That's not the type of inflation we're talking about.
And the same happened in the 70s. It's not like somehow the Fed got loose all of a sudden. On the contrary, people forget that Reaganism was started by Jimmy Carter. And Paul Volcker was the like Ben Bernanke today, chairman of the Fed, and wasn't important in changing, though he's another one of those old guys who are, what have I done?
Volcker hardly gets any credit for the Morning in America.
He probably likes to keep probably a low profile because he probably deserves more blame than he's getting, right?
And the growth period in the 80s that Reagan always gets credit for, I mean, that was really Volcker.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, right. It goes both ways and these sort of things. So the irony of Ben Bernanke being a very conservative guy, generally a right-winger, a real bona fide right-winger, that's why, you know, Bush nominated him, being really the only person defending the world against the insanity of the banksters engineering a great depression, a greater depression. You couldn't do it better. Buy the textbook. I mean...
Yeah, you know, I think Bernanke just. I mean, he. I think, you know, he might be right wing, but he understands that what's going to work and what's not going to work, and I mean, that's why he's instituted the monetary policy.
And he studied the Great Depression. I mean, he has views. He's supply side. He's on multiple levels. He's very kind of in the pop term a Reaganist kind of economist. But he's not one like so many people. I assume many of them. It's because they don't get it. But are literally, you know, I jokingly, you know, me over the top, you know, I say, with these people, I mean, Goldman Sachs, are they part of Al Qaeda, you know? Because they're certainly doing the most damaging to America part of it, if they are.
You know, just to get back to the inflation in the 70s, again, that was another shock to your productive forces, right? Because the Saudis, they drew the oil sword. You know, so I mean, you could blame an administration like, I mean, I don't have any love for Reagan, but. I mean, ultimately, the inflation you saw in the 70s was really driven by oil prices.
Well, I mean, you say oil prices, yes, one. And argument...
That's something that... Oil filters...
And Vietnam, that's something to raise here. We talked about these things. Nothing costs like war.
Right.
I mean, a prolonged, serious war... Empires, be it Rome or America, can sustain themselves through rapid and continuous growth, conquering. basically. Now, sometimes you conquer directly, sometimes there's post-colonialism, you don't, you just put a dictator in place, and that kind of franchise conquering, if you will, known as post-colonialism. And today, like we were mentioning, it gets so cynical in the sense that, you know, even sometimes our charity organizations are doing the pillaging, like Haiti is a really horrible example. But war is so costly, and it has that long-term staggering, you know, expenses over decades, you know, like they don't even count in the cost of war, all the invalid soldiers and long-term care, which, as Jesse knows, one day we should talk about that specifically, they try and... Wait, I'm going through 2-3 words, all unacceptable on the radio, what the administration is doing to our veterans when they come back from fighting wars that are against their interests, too, I'd like to point out.
You could say screwing, right?
No, apparently not. There's no strict rules about the dirty word. It's kind of in context. So words like the one starts with an S and the C are tricky a little bit.
It's actually hypocritical. I mean, I think that... anybody that's in the English department, and of course, hopefully my professor's not listening to this, people, you need to come to grips. I mean, either you say one word and mean it, or you just don't say it. I mean, this candy coating, this doesn't make any sense.
Or it does. I mean, it's kind of it's a dance, though. You know, it's a funny, weird dance where you're sending signals out, subliminal, under...
If I wanted to dance, I'd go to a theater or something like that. I mean, I think people waste too much time candy coating and things get missed, and people get upset because they didn't get the message or the other person didn't care. I mean, that's why wars break out, really.
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, usually all about economics, I would say. Yeah. Like, I always challenge students, you know, about that. Sure. Give me a war that's not about economics.
You know,
Ben, tricky one.
I just want to go on a quick tangent here. You know, in the last 10 years, we've seen an inflation rate average like 1.8%.
Yeah, no inflation.
While fighting two wars.
Good question.
Which historically are very inflationary. So, I mean, I think that really should probably wake people up to the fact that we're really in a deflationary spiral. I until you just mentioned it in that context, I hadn't even thought of the fact that we've seen incredibly low inflation despite a massive inflationary
and
force.
And the, you know, again, where's the deficit gone? I mean, other than in the bankster's pocket, that's where it's gone.
Defense.
And these wars, what do you think it's going to cost? I mean, and there's these pretend ideas of how much. And again, what even we cost it now, I remember at the beginning, what was it they were saying? Ah, it's going to cost $200 million or something. It was really like, are you... I mean, the cigarettes budget is going to be bigger than that, idiot. Of course, maybe that's under the assumption that anybody's ever conquered a country and had the civilian population wave flags and welcome you in, like that ever happened in history. We're being played. And in these economic policies and, you know, what, we came out, I guess, of the State of the Union. I hate those things. Good speech, though, by the way, let's say, you know. On a rare, very, very rare occasion that I can say something nice about the president, let me.
I am impressed.
Good speech.
I am impressed.
He's not going to do any of it in any meaningful way. He's going to bend over for corporate America, as usual.
I think there's a couple...
You say something good about Obama is definitely legit because I know exactly that you're like straight.
He's handsome.
Oh, and he can sing.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, I can say good things about him. I don't care about him personally. I don't know him. I don't care.
He can sing, but he can't dance, not like Boris Yeltsin, you know, doing the...
can do kung fu. Boris Yeltsin can do... Not Boris Yeltsin.
No, Putin.
Putin can do kung fu. Boris Yeltsin can put them down, though. I mean, Boris Yeltsin can drink.
Putin, yeah, definitely. Putin's like the next Chuck Norris.
That's
exactly. Oh,
that's weird on multiple levels.
That's what, yeah.
You know what? I've got to write this down. Because, and I definitely want to give a shout out to Professor John Bercia, which is one of our... gurus in international affairs here at Rollins College, as well as UCF. But you hit it right on the mark.
Yeah.
That's perfect. Anyway, please continue.
I think there are two things he talked about in the State of the Union, the minimum wage. I think that'll probably happen.
You know?
And, if Republicans turn it down, I mean, that's the issue that they can hammer him with in the next elections, you know?
Mm-hmm. Of course, you know me. I think that's all a conspiracy to some extent, so...
Divide and conquer, baby.
The 1%, I think, actually... okay, I know, I'm disturbing. Get it back after that. I think it's funny. And I said it during the election at some point, I think, that I think the whole Romney thing was a balloon. It was not intended to win. In fact, I think that's why Karl Rove didn't pull off probably the mass electoral fraud that he perfected since stealing the election in 2000. 2004, not so clean. 2000, completely clear. And 2008, we know they stole some 8 million votes, potentially, but not enough. The landslide, Obama's landslide was overwhelming. Yeah. I'd like to point that out. I know people are like, what? Yeah, yeah. In recent times, the GOP has been involved in third world country style electoral fraud. Mm-hmm. Straight up, sorry, fact.
Well, I mean, I don't know how much it means. I guess I could say I was impressed that several of the Republican governors and legislatures that have been thinking about changing their electoral college systems in their states and how they tally those votes, they eventually did turn them down. So, I mean, kudos for them as far as that goes. But the other thing in the State of the Union that I think can get some good traction is his pre-K proposals, increasing pre-K funding and more poor people, more poor kids going to early education.
Early education programs, I think.
So, I mean, I don't have that much information to talk about it on the show, but I think that can probably get some traction.
It's actually, you know, Obama, he lived in Chicago, where Chicago is really, more than any other city in the country, I think it's the epitome of the problem the entire nation faces. You have this huge divide between the wealthy and the poor. And the opportunities that are available. I mean, it's the most segregated city in the country. Right? It's a beautiful city, but it's the most segregated city in the country. And I mean, Obama, I mean, he's probably more than any president in the last 20 years, he is intimately aware of, you know, of the problems that face these people. You know, and I have to give him credit for at least paying lip service to them.
Yeah, maybe lip service. I mean, but sadly,
lip service is a step up.
Is it? Is it really? So my conspiracy theorist, to put back my conspiracy theorist hat, I really think to some extent, maybe initially, remember how Romney had a lot of money and then stopped? I mean, maybe they kind of floated, see, how is this? Is this, are we ready for an all-out, you know, neo-feudal takeover? Or not? And I think they figured, maybe not. You know, people are not willing to accept that they're all like lazy peasants. For example, remember the response to that 46% comment that you know, only the rich really are productive and everybody else are just parasites. So in some sense, I'm looking at Obama and I'm saying, listen, his first 4 years, he was the perfect corporate candidate. He did what the banksters asked and then some, you know,
you guys missed something.
Yeah. I can bend over further a little bit, and in some sense, you know, look at it, doesn't get any better than that. Imagine Romney had won. You know, we are facing massive economic problems. You know, things are going to get way worse. There's no recovery anytime soon, at least not a meaningful one. In other words, jobs. People would be going like, wait a minute, you cut more taxes. We went into hunger now. You did this. You all those wonderful conservative policies. They can't work, people. Sorry, you know, you might as well, you know, stay at home and pray. I mean, instead of doing that, it would cause less damage, that's for sure. And then what would happen in 2016? You might actually have a legitimate third-party option, maybe a resurgent left. I don't know what, you know, but people were like, huh.
It's actually, you know, it's funny. Before the election, I was having that exact conversation with my parents. My parents are, you know, they're very conservative, right? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, a lot of people, as they get older, they become more conservative. I told my parents, I'm like, you know, I hope Romney wins. I hope he institutes the policies that he's actually, you know, he's talked about. And I hope the country goes into a violent economic tailspin just so that we can be done with these policies and that, you know, for the remainder of my life that maybe we can have some, you know, maybe there's a third party, you know, but... You know,
but instead...
It's only four years.
Instead, the right-wingers, the nationalists, all of those wonderful people...
They're like zombies.
They're like, oh, we lost... You stupid majority. Well, you'll see now, right? You elected your socialist president. So we'll get another 4 years of Obama administration, which is to the right of Ronald Reagan.
By the way,
in some ways, significantly so. You know?
On the internet, we call those people trolls.
I thought they were called... I mean, I hate to say... First, conservative liberal thing is really, I think...
Yeah, it's backwards.
Can we just go back to left-wing, right-wing? I don't know, you know, but... But you see the sham idea being that here's a guy who kind of means well, can be if you squint and drink a lot, you could say that maybe he's a liberal or you know, or a center-left kind of Krugmanite, but in action, not really. Like I said, in action, it's all to the right of Ronald Reagan.
And I mean, one of his other proposals in the State of the Union was infrastructure spending, but only $50 billion. That's like, why even try anymore? I mean, that's
exactly.
I mean, if that's what he's starting off asking for, I mean, it's not going to get any of it. So
yeah, I know. Let's have our infrastructure of the United States of America, the 300 million people, the greatest country in the world, looks like a poor, or to be honest now, a middle-income country. You know, I mean, I haven't seen roads like this, electricity like that since I lived in the Middle East.
We need like $2 trillion worth of
essay, back in 2007.
Bonuses. It's what? It's 1.5 average Wall Street bonus, individual. To buy jewelry with this year for Christmas?
The Society of American Engineers in 07, they did a study. I'm pretty sure they said $3 trillion over the next 10 years.
Yeah, and we're only asking for $50 billion, and not even that's going to get passed. It's amazing.
It's astounding.
Yeah,
I thought that would actually work, but again, the complete control of the media and the fact that it's such a circus, I mean, a circus of the macabre, if you want to get specific. Because how come people... In argument early on, I try and say that to people. You know, Americans, aren't you? You know, be ashamed. Why don't you want the super highways and you know and fancy machines that go beep everywhere? And people in America somehow think that we are living in an environment that is so high tech. Of course, we are.
You mean utopia?
Yeah, even the dumb things, you know, like I told people, like health, silly things like healthcare, you know, that when I brought to Europe to grandparents the ultrasound of my son, before he was born, obviously, 96, Carolina hospitals, one of the best hospitals in the world, certainly in the nation, it was black and white, and some people, like in Europe back then, we were showing it, it was like, what is this, some abstract art, because they haven't seen a black and white, that's not important. But we pay 5 times more than the you know OECD. The level is like middle income like country, you know, middle to poor income country. Again, taken as a whole, there's excellent doctors in America, of course, but most Americans can't get to see them. You see this kind of Americans are so proud of America, so let's harness that feeling, you know? Let's do something to be proud of.
But yeah, all these proposals actually make it better.
We can do a lot better. I mean, it's not like we're, you know, living in the... I don't believe we're living in the best.
America even has advantages, I think, cultural on multiple levels. Distrust of government.
Yeah.
It came to bite us in the butt today, I think, really. But originally, that's a really great part of American culture.
Embrace that, people.
But now, those who are the most anti-government, in some sense, I believe, are doing the government's dirty work for them.
Well, it's a clever narrative, right? It's a clever narrative that you know this. The ultra conservatives they've played on those that are suspicious of government to basically say you know it's a liberal communist. Fascist takeover, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at some of the incredibly ridiculous conspiracy theories about Obama, you know.
A lot of it is the crypto racism, by the way. When you see the complete irrational, silly stuff, like that movie, I'd like to make that, I think, maybe, you know, the Obama
2016,
it's fascinating because on the one hand, there's the highbrow, utterly white supremacist, racist narrative of the movie, but very, very highbrow, very civilized, you know? Certainly not that the racist image, you see that kind of red-faced, angry person, right? Mm-hmm. No, very highbrow. And then there's the music, the sounds, the camera work. All of that is just directly working the old tools.
Yeah.
The old, like, straight-up racist stuff, the classic things, you know? Oh, black man sleeping with white women, big sin. Obama is born out of sin. I mean, you know, you're like putting the standards. Yeah. The Nazis did it already better, you know, in black and white, you know?
Yeah, they kind of use the straw man to push their policies. You know, if they have a narrative where government is like bad in anything it does, then they can push these policies that... I mean the one that I posted yesterday about spending, crowding out private sector spending.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, if you have this narrative where the government can't do anything right, you know, it makes things worse. Mm-hmm. They say, you know, anytime the government spends money, it's crowding out. So what I mean by crowding out is it means Like if you have a dollar in government spending, that means a dollar in private sector spending isn't getting spent.
That's right.
Right. And but really that's not the case right now in these circumstances. In normal times, sure. Yeah, I mean that's correct. But not when we're in like these circumstances where we have such a gap between, you know, we have these low interest rates and
They're not investing, in other words. So any investment the government, and the government's cutting back, yet the private sector is not stepping in. So right, it's one of those context things too that I think we discussed before. It depends where your economy is with your policy. I mean, this may be the point, like to go back to minimum wage for a second. So you see, we've already said that the models in the real world are complicated. In fact, I'll say another thing, and yeah, that's the thing that blew my mind when I found it out. You can't observe demand and supply. Right? I mean, okay, this is a slightly technical point, but I'll say it here, because we're here, you're hanging, you know, and we're doing it for fun, right? All you see is dots, combinations of quantities and prices. You see a cloud of dots. Now, the economist comes in and connects those, the cloud, just a of dots, and makes, oh, it looks like an X. Maybe. It might look like a donut, you know, or a turd. I can say turd, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I can say turd.
But yeah, they try and make a linear graph out of it, but yeah, and it does take time because you can just take a snapshot, but that's only a snapshot. You have to have a sequence of events over time to get
it. Alfred Marshall, mid 19th century, he invented the graphs. I mean, the principle was already there, probably Adam Smith, even before, whatever. Marshall invents this stuff. When he starts, puts these X's, these supplies and demand together, you know, with equilibrium prices and quantities, he says that this is, I'm paraphrasing, right, but crutches. It's so difficult for human beings to deal with infinitely complex social phenomenons. We can't. So what do? These are theoretical mechanical crutches for the economist to try and make sense of the world a little bit. He said that these should only be discussed or included in highly technical paper, and even there, preferably in the appendix.
Yeah.
Now it is all we do. There is no Mr. Supply and Mr. Demand. There is no Mr. Market out there. These are conceptual tools for people to think about a phenomenon. There is no demand curve. There is no real demand. You hear it all the time on the radio, right? I mean, the markets felt good today. I mean, every time I cringe. The markets are institutions of people. But what happens then? Okay, assuming, never mind, it's a useful crutch. When we raise minimum wage, it does put a downward pressure. You mentioned it, you know, on some businesses that will hire less people or adjust the business processes. So it's true supply-demand model. It's not untrue. The quantities, the relative amounts, all very tricky because that depends on the shape of the curves, as both of you mentioned. Now, the trick is, though, and then we stop. You say, oh, see, here comes the ideology now to go with the graph. The liberal, if you will, idea of helping the poor, you're just hurting them, really, because you're giving them more money, but you're increasing unemployment. Valid argument out of that model, absolutely. Then, next part of the story, right, is that we look at statistics and we find, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
In fact, generally, overwhelmingly, when you raise minimum wage, you actually get more employment. The inverse is true.
Because it probably relies on multiplier effects.
Well, two-thirds of the time, I went back and did about two-thirds of the time since 38, since we've raised the minimum wage the following year. There has generally been a small increase in employment, not unemployment, in employment,
yes,
meaning unemployment falls.
So actually,
this is the part of the loop. This is the tie-in: is that people, they have more disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris, as you just said, because of that, disposable income is lower on the ladder. It's going to have higher velocity in the system
because they don't save it, marginal
propensity for consumption, and
exactly.
You know, you have your multiplier effect. Mm-hmm. So.
And there's also, I mean, interesting, absolutely, but there's also a tremendous amount of anthropology, sociology that actually answers, I think, most of that question. The details, you got to go down there and see how the institutions are really working. You know.
Well, that's another argument
really?
About...
It's kind of contextual.
Sorry.
How does it work, though? Now are we on the air again?
Oh, we're still on the air. It just skipped.
Oh, it just skips a little.
So
yeah, there's a lag.
Yeah, okay. I think it's a little paranoid here, quite honestly.
Got a delay, yeah.
But hey, you know, so in this world, maybe better paranoid than not. You know, exactly. I'm sure the public figured out whatever. Well, mm-hmm. it was quite nice.
One thing I want to, we got 5 minutes. I want to throw this in before we run out of time. And I am for raising the minimum wage. I think it's a good thing. And the academic in me, you know, wants me to tell everyone, it's like, you know what, chances are this time around it'll probably increase employment. Right, and, you know, you look at the theory, like what we just talked about, right?
That's a pretty substantial increase.
Awesome, yeah. My one caveat is that you have to look out for automation this time around.
Okay. So you're thinking that we're really ready for the companies now. We'll really move to replace the machines.
I think it might just be more increases in their incentive. You know, it's something that's going to happen anyways. I think it just might accelerate it because, it's kind of like you're reaching. It's this critical mass. Robots are cheaper than ever. The cost to implement them, you know,
that's true. Yeah, that's a good point.
The know-how is more widely spread. The robots are more sophisticated. Machine vision's the big thing. These robots that can do things that in the past couldn't do.
They're still pretty expensive, though. They're so much more expensive than desperate working-class people.
I mean, you'd be shocked. Like, you know, your standard robotic arm that looks, it's like maybe twice the size of these booms that we have here in studio, right? $25,000 for something like that.
Wow.
So,
and a smart one, not the toy, right?
A smart, industrial robot that's going to last a long time.
You break even on that in 1 year.
Payback times, below a year. So, my caveat is, and even saying that, I still say raise the minimum wage. Because I'm a big fan of experimentation, right? Do something different in economics.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Do something different. So go ahead, raise the minimum wage, and let's see what happens. And you know what? If automation accelerates, that's, I think, just an impetus to say, all right, let's have the discussion now. Now, it'll just be, will there be more people unemployed? Yes. But it'll be, we have to start having a discussion about, do we have minimum standard of living? How do we address, basically, this new world where... You know, it's almost a bit utopian, right? There, you know, economics is a study of conditions made on. It's a study of choices made under scarcity. Mm. Well, scarcity, you know, other than maybe natural resources, scarcity is going away for productive purposes. Right. Yep. So we need to have
all of this is all very rational. Obviously, every time we get to the problem of power. And those at the very top think that everything's quite splendid, thank you very much, and we don't want any change, naturally.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to throw in one point about the minimum wage before we go, about who it potentially helps the most. You know, one study said it'd be women that it helps the most.
Of course. So
it says last year, 64% of workers who earned the minimum wage or less were women. And so if they found, this is by CAP, Center for American Progress, they found if wages were increased to what the proposal is, from $7.25 to $9, nearly 9 million women would see their earnings directly increased. Mm-hmm. And then another 4.2 million are estimated to get a spillover effect wage hike. So,
and this is the population. You have to understand that the poverty in America, you know, the people who are poor, I mean, not middle, working class, at the bottom, are very, very poor. Poorer than most other rich countries, very significantly, again, generally statistically. Because we don't have, you know, all these childcare, healthcare, all those things that are guaranteed universally, even to bums in other countries. Anyway, so your story is part of what I was saying of why that reversal in anthropological, sociological. A lot of the people depending on this minimum wage or under are on the border. They don't have they're a dollar away. They don't have any savings, etc. So imagine the scenario of this woman, right, in poverty, earning minimum wage, maybe has kids, and her beat-up old car breaks down. The typical American poor person is a three-job juggling single mom,
That's a death blow.
By the way, yeah, that's it. You lose your three jobs, it's over. Does she have that $400 to repair the car? And the consistent general way, you know, just getting people into poverty, desperation and into just poverty, gives them the ability to be stable, to keep a job, kids are sick, what's she gonna do? She leaves them at home, then child services, that sort of thing. So you kind of bump them over that ledge of utter desperation, and that kind of they can become productive poor people in society.
So that's kind of another. So I guess we should.
Yeah, got a rep.
What's yes, up? It's time to go. What can I say? But before we get off the air, I'm going to go retro punk.
Oh.
Anyway, let's say goodbye. Goodbye, everybody. Yeah.
Goodbye.
So ta-ta for now.
See you soon.
Dig what we all
talking about my generation.
I'm trying to cause a big sensation.
Talking about my generation.
Talking about my generation.
Talking about my generation.